Love and Light. This is Healthy Talk Show for Thursday, November 7th, 2019. I'm Robert.
And I'm Marissa.
Show notes will be over at healthytalkshow.com/31.
On this episode of Healthy Talk Show, we have Canadian bacon news, the yellow vests, and advice for social media influencers. But first,
Black Friday is closing in fast, less than 4 weeks away. But the deals are already in full effect. From Costco to Walmart, Amazon even pulling in Mariah Carey to reveal her holiday must-haves. But just how...
Yeah.
Why is it always Mariah Carey for Christmas?
Yeah.
How does she get the Christmas
deal? She got
deal?
The big Christmas song. Dang. She's the... Who else has the big Christmas song?
I don't know. I guess...
I think it's Mariah Carey.
Dang.
She is the Christmas song. She's got the big celebrity with the Christmas song of our time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. She got that niche.
Yeah.
So far, some people are willing to go to pull off the perfect holiday revealed in a new report from credit card.
I have a problem with that.
Okay.
Why is a perfect holiday dependent upon buying a bunch of stuff?
Because of commercialism.
.com. More than half of millennials, specified as 20-somethings, 23 to 28, who were surveyed, saying the holidays are reason enough to go deeper into debt.
I know it's a survey by creditcards.com,
yeah.
But still, those are outstanding results. It's quite 50%.
That's
crazy.
Family time.
That is a lot.
Oh, man.
And that debt is mostly credit card debt. That's got the highest interest rates of any type of debt, meaning the perfect Christmas may come at a very steep price.
Credit card debt. The worst kind.
Oh, yeah. I got sucked into that.
Yeah. Oh, you did.
And it is not just millennials. Nearly half of all credit card holders are willing to pile on credit card debt this holiday season.
Yeah.
Why?
Because they want people to be broke.
But why are people willing to do it?
I don't know.
Stop buying stuff.
Yeah.
Just spend time together. Quality time is the best thing.
Yeah. Cook a nice meal together and hang out. Talk.
There you go.
Get off the cell phones.
Yep. Artie?
The Broward County Sheriff's Department wants to hear from Amazon's Alexa as a possible witness in a murder case. It involves a 43-year-old Hollandale Beach man, Adam Crespo, who's accused of killing his girlfriend, 32-year-old Sylvia Galva, back in July during an argument in their apartment. Police say Crespo dragged Galva off the bed, then plunged a spear with a 12-inch blade into her chest. But he says it was an accident, that she grabbed the spear and accidentally broke off and punctured her. The couple, who have had
quite a story.
Yeah, this is crazy.
Quite a story for court.
History of domestic disputes, had two Amazon Echo devices in their apartment. The Echo responds to the command Alexa and whatever else the user wants, such as Alexa, what's the weather today? Or Alexa, play me the news headlines.
Right, I think we all know how Alexa works.
Yeah, but he wanted to describe how it works.
And maybe trigger everyone's Alexa.
I think that's what he was probably trying to do. It's hilarious.
Alexa.
Yeah.
Amazon user switches it off in their settings, those commands are sometimes recorded and sent back to Amazon for employees to analyze, according to the company, in order to make the Echo function better. The Broward County Sheriff's Department obtained a search warrant in September for anything recorded by the two Echo devices in the couple's apartment to see if anything at all stemming from the fight was recorded. It's yet another case involving law enforcement and our courts issuing search warrants and subpoenas for Alexa recordings. There was a double murder case in New Hampshire last year in which the judge ordered Amazon to turn over 2 days of Alexa recordings, and another murder investigation in
Arkansas.
2 days? Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
2 days of Alexa recordings.
Wait. So how often is Alexa recording, too?
Well...
The judge also ordered Amazon Alexa recordings to be turned over in that case investigation. An Amazon spokesperson told the South Florida Sun Sentinel that, quote, Echo only records short bursts of statements and are not eavesdropping on private conversations. But there have been confirmed reports and plenty of stories about Alexa accidentally recording conversations in a home and either sending them to Amazon employees for review or even to other users by mistake.
And what? Then the Amazon employees, remember they were sharing them in their instant messaging protocol, whatever they use, and people weird sexual things they were picking up. Oh, listen to this person moan and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I remember we talked about that.
That got leaked out. That was leaked out a few months ago. But so, people forget.
And no one's addressing, well, what all is being recorded? How can you see this? And who's controlling this information?
Yeah.
Where is it being stored permanently? How long?
Yeah.
And then how far back can police go back and pull all this stuff?
Yeah. And use it against you. It's a privacy thing.
What else are they going to be looking for?
PBS NewsHour.
But the person who would eventually help crack the case was not in law enforcement at all. CeCe Moore is what's known as a genetic genealogist, someone who helps people trace their family ancestry.
By about 2012, I think it was starting to kind of bubble to the surface with a few of us that what we're doing could have law enforcement applications. But it wasn't time yet. The databases were too small.
But that was all about to change commercial DNA.
Yes.
I know so many
people. I don't
want
to set it up. I don't want to set up the clip because it was about something not related to anything. But yeah.
Testing suddenly went mainstream.
Don't just give a gift. Give them Ancestry DNA.
Oh, that's a little
DNA
awkward.
Testing services like Ancestry.com and 23andMe have exploded in popularity. It's estimated that more than 26 million people have now used companies like this.
The process of testing your DNA is actually pretty simple. You order the kit online. These each cost about $100 each. And then you just spit some saliva into a tube like this. You mail it in. And in a few weeks, you get your DNA reports.
As millions of people started getting their DNA results, many of them copied their data into other public websites so they could better find distant family members.
Oh, no.
But CeCe Moore realized this wealth of information could also be used to help solve cold cases.
Scary, isn't it?
It's
kind of like Umbrella tracking everybody.
Yeah.
It's very scary.
I was a little disturbed how they sold it as this nice, cute gift thing, but then they're using it for all sorts of purposes.
And you have to pay $100. Yeah, that's the worst. That's the kicker. This should be free.
Well, and then I think they sell you extra stuff because that's what somebody was
add-ons.
Telling. Yeah. Like, oh my God, they know all this
and
though.
And it ships to your home in a cute little box, just like all of these mail delivery services. Yep. These people love it.
Oh man.
Ready to roll? Moving on. DTNS, Daily Tech News Show.
The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board released more than 400 pages of reports and supporting documents on the March 2018 crash of an autonomous Uber car that killed 49-year-old Elaine Hertzberg in Tempe, Arizona. Hertzberg was...
I just read the title, Self-Driving Uber?
Yeah.
Crash wasn't designed to see jaywalkers?
Oh, no, it wasn't.
What?
Was walking her bicycle across the road in a place not designated for pedestrians. So this was jaywalking. The report says the car detected Hertzberg and her bicycle before she entered the lane of traffic, 5.6 seconds before the car hit her. The system initially classified her as a vehicle because she was to the side. They're like, oh, there's another vehicle on the side of the road. Then it changed the classification several times as it realized, well, wait a minute, that doesn't look exactly like a vehicle.
Oh, no.
It did not, however, predict that she would change her direction of travel and cross in front of the car. Uber says it has now made changes since that to its system that would correctly identify her as a pedestrian and anticipate that she might be about to walk in front of the car, apply the brakes at least 4 seconds before impact.
Well, that's great.
This is why I just don't see it with self-driving cars. It's hard to make those distinctions, even though it's easy.
Yeah, for us. But how do you program that into a computer?
Precisely.
24 seconds is a kicker to this.
That is not what happened then because the system wasn't capable of doing that. As was previously reported, there was a safety driver. There was a human in this car, but that safety driver was watching a video on her phone and did not see Hertzberg in time to apply the brakes herself.
That is horrible.
The report also notes that the Uber Advanced Technologies Group
in
Tempe
crazy.
Didn't have a standalone safety division or a formal safety plan, standard operating procedures, or a manager focused on preventing accidents.
So wait, they didn't have SOPs and their safety driver was on their phone? Holy crap.
Oh, well, that's
this whole autonomous car thing, this whole safety driver, you can't say anything now. Now you can just make the argument that the safety driver, what are you going to do about that?
And what happens in any sort of disaster, anytime the road is compromised or anything unexpected happens? I don't know.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yep. Sky News.
The current screening process works by taking a sample of cells from the cervix at a doctor's surgery. But under the new test, a urine or vaginal sample is taken using a DIY home kit. Several studies have shown the results to be just as accurate as from the clinically taken sample. Scientists at Queen Mary University of London asked 600 women to provide samples collected themselves using a simple swab.
I think there's enough evidence to begin to use it now for women who do not come for a clinician-taken sample. This is clearly as good a test and can be done at home. In the future, we think that this can potentially be done in all women, but there is more work to be done to look exactly how it compares to the clinically taken samples.
The new S5 test can identify the most...
Wasn't that a little contradictory, what he said?
Yeah, it was a little weird.
Because they had just finished saying that it was as effective, but then he kind of implied that they weren't sure if it was as effective?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking that I heard that correctly. Yep.
Dangerous types of the human papillomavirus, and then indicate the risk of getting cancer.
There you go. So, maybe the end of the smear test.
Yeah, we'll see.
According to the headlines.
his report wasn't too comforting. But, you know, ladies, you only have to do it, once every one?
I hear it's very unpleasant.
Like 2 to 3 years? Yeah.
it's a very unpleasant process.
It's not the best process, but, you know, gotta keep yourself healthy.
Yeah. This is all you. Science Daily?
Oh.
Do celiac families really need 2 toasters?
Yeah, this was a pretty interesting study.
Yeah.
Because if you look at all the celiac recommendations, they say, you know, no sharing toasters, this and that.
I know. I know. I've had a toaster or two thrown away because it's contaminated. We don't know.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. So this study said there's actually been no empirical evidence that proves it. And they claim that you can share toasters, and they tested it for parts per to see whether it was under the threshold of 20 parts per million. And they said even, sharing toasters, and they said they cut cupcakes with the same knife and there were gluten crumbs on it, and they cut a gluten-free one. Yeah, wow. I'm not sure I quite buy it, but they said it tested under the limits. But it's interesting. I guess it at least gives some comfort for gluten-mixed households that you don't have to be so paranoid and still be safe. So.
But it
does bring up, we need more science-based approaches to celiac and detection levels. So.
Yeah, and less just, I think I'm celiac.
Yeah.
I want to be a pain in the ass and not be able to order food at a restaurant. City News Toronto.
Canadian pork and beef exports to China will resume. Thanks to Ambassador Barton and the Canadian meat industry for their work on reopening this important market for our meat producers and their families. China closed their markets to Canadian meat in June, saying some meat contained a banned substance. Canadian authorities say an export certificate wasn't authentic. Industry lobbyists are celebrating the news. In a statement, Chris White, president of the Canadian Meat Council, said, "Our long-standing trade relationship with China is very important to both sides, and this represents an important step for both countries." The dispute over meat followed the arrest of Huawei executive Menghua Zhou.
Very interesting.
I remember that.
Yeah. Very interesting that this turned from a meat report to this.
Yeah.
Canada arrested the high-profile figure based on an extradition agreement with the United States. That was then followed by the arrest of 2 Canadians who remain incarcerated in China.
What?
Interesting.
No, who's talking about that?
Yeah, I haven't heard that at all.
I've seen the person on the left. I don't know about the person on the right, actually.
Canadian canola exports were also banned. No word yet on how the easing of the dispute over meat will impact canola exports and the fate of the detained Canadian.
Interesting.
Yeah, especially with the African swine flu fever.
Yeah.
Fever, swine fever.
That's infecting all the Chinese pigs, so yeah. It makes sense that they'd be looking to make a deal, get some pork.
Make a deal the best.
Yeah.
Whatever deal they can get.
Oh, yeah.
Global news.
In Canada, people are also unknowingly consuming dangerous amounts of lead from their drinking water. In some cities, lead levels were found to be comparable to those of Flint at the height of its water crisis.
We're probably talking about hundreds of thousands of people in the population of Canada that right now, every time they open their taps, there's a good chance that they're getting a little bit of lead coming out of that pipe.
Canadians are not being informed on when lead levels are high, not only in their homes, but in their schools and daycare.
Pretty scary if the whole Flint thing is true, because Flint blew up and...
Yeah, well, it makes sense just with the age of the infrastructure in general.
Yeah.
It's the same issues that Flint had, aging pipes.
Yep. Global news, bad testing practices.
Lead is measured in parts per billion. Health Canada's guideline for acceptable lead levels in drinking water is 5 parts per billion. But both Health Canada and the World Health Organization agree that there is no safe level of lead. In some places, when officials are testing for lead, they do what's called a flush test, where you let taps run for 5 minutes before gathering a water sample.
Yeah, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's not really a good test. Because what about all this stuff?
Yeah.
That's going to hit the cup, unless you're flushing out your faucet every time you use it.
Actually, how you drink the water, so it might not be an accurate description of what your lead levels are going to look like when you are taking that first glass of water in the morning.
It's a test designed to identify whether there's a problem in the city's water, but it's not going to capture what we need to know for public health.
Even based on flush tests, lead levels in Montreal still reached an average comparable to levels in Flint when similar testing was done there. In Prince Rupert, British Columbia, and 3 cities in Saskatchewan, the investigation found that average lead levels exceeded Health Canada's guideline of 5 parts per billion.
Those are really high.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good freeze frame right there, you know?
For the
video podcast there on YouTube. And then lead exposure in the human body.
Lead exposure in children has been linked to behavioral problems and a loss of IQ. In adults, it can cause high blood pressure, heart disease, kidney disease, and reduced fertility. Ongoing exposure to even low levels of lead can be toxic.
Can be toxic.
Especially to kids. Babies.
Jeez. Scary stuff. But the whole, you know, they're talking about how we need to change the infrastructure and all that. Well, someone's got to pay for that.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Who's going
to
pay?
That's the problem with Flint, is no one wants to pay and they're poor. So.
Yep. CTV measles.
New research is giving doctors yet another reason to urge parents to vaccinate their children. 2 new studies say that when a child gets measles, they become more susceptible to contracting other viruses such as strep or chickenpox. The theory is that the measles basically wipes out whatever immunity you had already built up and resets your system back to when you were a baby. Now, joining us for more on this is Steve Ellidge. He is a professor of genetics and medicine at Harvard Medical School and also one of the authors of the studies. So,
there we go. Got the nice intro. So, would you like to hear what Steve Ellidge has to say?
Yeah, let's see his take.
According to the CDC, 0.2% to 1% of people who contract the measles die directly of the measles.
Mm-hmm.
What we found out is that the measles is even more lethal than what we initially understood. It turns out that the measles infects your immune system and kills off part of it. And so basically it removes the memory of your previous infection. So the knowledge your immune system has gathered over your entire life is damaged. And the immune system just forgets.
The immune system just forgets.
Well,
how much immunity is wiped away?
Let's see what he says.
By the measles?
Well, it depends on the child, but in a group of 77 children that we looked at before and after the measles infected them, this is a group in Holland, it turned out that between 11% and 73% of your previous antibody diversity is wiped out. And it could be even more severe in some children. So it's a distribution. It varies from person to person, but we think that the people who have the most severe cases of measles actually have the most to worry about in the future, because they may have lived through particular infections before but become resistant to them. But now they have to roll the dice and try to live through it again.
Oh, my
gosh.
And
that's the danger.
Sorry, that was a little...
Yeah, roll the dice.
A little dramatic.
Oh, yeah. I have two more clips, but you can jump in whenever.
I want to see what he says.
Okay. Can the cells be replaced, and are they as good?
It's not only the B cells, but a special kind of antibody-producing cell called a long-lived plasma cell that lives in your bone marrow. These are antibody factories, and these live for decades in your body and produce antibodies to protect you, and they can't grow again. So if they get killed off, you have to re-educate your immune system either by vaccination or, unfortunately, by infection to get them back. We don't know the extent of how much damage there is because we haven't been able to look far enough down.
did the study.
Yeah. It's a brand new study.
Yeah. So it was definitely a little scary there in the beginning. They all die. But yeah, if you get reinfected or get a vaccine just natural exposure to these things. Because it was interesting in the study because they were really tracking these small changes in these little communities by zip code as they got reinfected. But it wasn't that long after getting the measles. So I think we need to look at more long-term effects, too.
Yeah.
Does he have more to say?
5 seconds on this clip.
But we'd like to do that in the future.
There we
but
go.
As it is, we know they're severely damaged.
Severely damaged.
Well, again.
I just have one more clip. This is a long one, minute 20. Are just children at risk?
Adults can be equally as affected. And in fact, they have a little bit more to lose. First of all, our immune systems as we age are not as efficient. So that means when we do get measles, if we hadn't been vaccinated and we get the measles, we may have a more severe case. But secondly, we've accumulated a lot of knowledge in our immune system, and we stand to lose even more. And so it's bad for children, it's bad for adults, and we really need to be getting vaccinated, not only for ourselves, but for other people around us who may also suffer from this. And one other thing that we found out in our study was that the amount of antibodies just in normal people goes down over time because they were vaccinated 30, 40, 50 years ago, and they haven't been rechallenged because of herd immunity, because no one's presumably coming into interacting with people who have the measles. So your immunity wanes over time, and it's quite possible, and this needs to be checked out, that
I love it.
That was very interesting, because their study did not talk about that. Now, I didn't look at any background research to see if that has been studied, but I think that just points to the fact that we need to look into it more and see how immunity evolves throughout a person's lifespan, because I don't know that we've really fully understand how the immune system works even.
Yeah. 11 seconds or 21.
Older individuals are actually no longer resistant to measles. And if that's the case, they would need to be revaccinated. So
if that's the case.
Yeah.
Love it.
A lot of think about speculation.
This, but if it's then that.
People who are older, who are going to areas that measles is endemic to or live in a community with low vaccination rates, should consider that as a possibility.
Well, that's always
another
good factor to consider, but again, a personal choice. So if you want to show the study, there are two studies.
So here's one study. Here's two. Incomplete genetic reconstitution of B cell pools contributes to prolong immunosuppression after measles.
Yeah.
Big words there. And then measles virus infection diminishes pre-existing antibodies that offer protection from other pathogens.
I just want to point out who funded that.
Let's take a look. Who funded this study? What the hell? Where'd it go? All right. Do a search for the word.
Funding. So a grant from the Value of Vaccine Research Network.
Okay, the Value of Vaccine Research Network. They have just a vested interest to show that vaccines have value.
And they may have a point.
Well, of course.
You know, that absolutely. Was a small
but
study.
Still, why do you have to put in your damn name?
Yeah.
It's just, think of better names, dude. It's come
but,
on.
But then we couldn't pull this beautiful thing.
Yeah. It's just, but it's always interesting to see who's funding what because follow the money. There's always financial incentive somewhere for someone.
Yeah. So just take that as you will.
Yep. More research is good. Definitely always researching more. It is interesting that your immune system can lose its immunity somehow through measles. That's fascinating. That's fascinating research. Sounds probably going to be 50 years out still.
I guess my next question would be, why do we pump so many vaccines as a baby? Maybe we need them
spread out so
throughout our life. Exactly. Or who knows? We need to study this all.
Yep.
Study it all.
Yep. So going now back a few months, back in June, France 24, just because I was curious what the French think about vaccines. Here we go.
France now leads the world in anti-vaccine sentiment, according to the biggest ever...
Oh, my.
France?
What?
Leads the world in anti-vaccine sentiment? Wow.
Survey on public attitudes towards health and science, 33% of French people do not agree that immunization is safe. British medical charity Wellcome teamed up with Gallup World Poll to survey more than 140,000 people across 144 countries. And this study also found that France has among the highest levels of distrust of government. Experts say this is correlated with skepticism.
Can you blame them, though?
I love the report.
Yeah.
Over vaccines. Until the turn of this century, around 90% of French people were pro-vaccine. But a series of scandals involving drug companies shook public confidence.
Wait. What drug scandals?
Oh, we don't know because we're in America.
Ah, dang. I would love to know.
Yeah, we don't get to know.
We have our own drug scandals here, but, you know, no one.
Let's not talk about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
During the 2009 swine flu epidemic, the French government ordered huge quantities of vaccine, but less than 10% of people took up the offer.
Oh, fudge.
Wow.
Yeah. So the government had a huge stash of swine flu vaccines.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's interesting.
Hmm.
Talking about the distrust of government, you know,
yeah,
the French.
So why do they distrust their government?
I don't know, but... people don't know about the yellow vest, apparently, because we don't get to hear about protests here in the United States because they don't want people protesting. That's what a lot of people think. So the yellow vest, let's just hear CNBC. This is back January 31st, 2019, CNBC reporting on the yellow vest.
You've probably seen the images. Crowds of protesting.
No, you have not seen the images. If you're in the United States, you've not seen the images. Rewind.
You've probably seen the images. Crowds of protesters in France all wearing these yellow high visibility jackets. The protests, originally over planned fuel tax rises, began back in November 2018 and involved blockading highways across rural parts of the country.
Since then, hundreds of thousands of demonstrators have mobilized against the government.
Central Paris saw millions of dollars in damage and its most violent protest in a decade, something authorities attribute to the movement's more radical factions.
In response, France's President Emmanuel Macron has scrapped the fuel tax hike and many of his other proposed economic reforms.
But the protests haven't stopped. In fact, the Gilets Jaunes or Yellow Vest movement is now spreading across Europe.
Oh, man. No wonder they don't want to tell us about in America.
And that was back in January. I have a report from Rupley, and it says the Yellow Vest clashed with police during 50th straight week, and it was just posted last week.
Wow.
Rupley's RT, though, and there's no reporting. It's just the footage, so it's kind of weird. It won't work for the audio, so we'll just play a little bit of it. It's just footage, so you got police in SWAT gear, you got people wearing yellow vests, cameras out. Looks like tear gas going out. Yep, bunch of French people running around with the yellow vest on.
This is amazing that it's not being reported in the U.S.
Yeah, this is nuts. This is 50th straight week, according to Rupley. There's some guy getting beat up, old Frenchman. Yeah, this is nuts. This is crazy stuff.
Dang.
Oh, yeah.
I wish I spoke French.
What's going on in France? Woo!
Dang.
Scary. Ah, the yellow vests. P- PBS NewsHour. What's wrong with the score?
Well, I think a lot of it is that the test scores,
SAT scores,
are highly correlated with family income. If you come from a family making over $200,000, you have a 1 in 5 chance of scoring a 1,400 or above on the SAT. If you come from a family making under $20,000, a 1 in 50 chance. High correlation between family income and SAT scores. And as colleges and universities are trying to diversify, both economically, racially, and ethnically, I think they're trying to look for other ways of assessing students beyond just a single score on a 4-hour test.
And that's a PBS NewsHour with author Jeff Salingo, author of several books on higher education.
So does he address how they're going to assess all these students?
No. He talks more about the history of the SAT. Can we change the test to take other factors into account?
Okay.
Now, there have been attempts to try to change or tweak the test to try to take into account those sort of socioeconomic background issues. What most recently, the adversity score. Yep. Talk about that.
Oh,
so the College Board tried to come up with what they called an environmental context dashboard. It was actually separate from the SAT score, but what it would do is give admissions officers who were reviewing applications a sense of the type of background that the student was coming from. It looked at the neighborhood they grew up in. It looked at the high school that they went to. And as a result of a lot of pushback against this by high schools and by parents, the College Board decided to do away with this a couple of months ago. So they're looking for ways to measure the context that students are learning, whether that's from their home environment or from the
I have no idea how you would quantify.
They're looking for ways.
It sounds like a huge waste of time.
Yeah.
I don't know how you quantify it.
College Board and what's at stake?
Huge. The College Board, a nonprofit entity, over $1 billion in revenue.
Wait.
Yes.
Nonprofit.
Yeah,
I remember how expensive it was to take those tests. Those things are a ripoff.
Huge.
You can't even afford to take them if you're poor.
Well, that's what's at stake.
College Board, a nonprofit entity, over $1 billion in revenue from testing. That includes AP testing, college, SAT, and other types of.
What a scam that is.
You know,
what a scam.
I didn't get any AP credit for all those stupid tests I took.
Testing. So there's a lot at stake in this. Colleges and universities also have a lot at stake as well. The number one predictor of success in college are grades in high school and the rigor of the high school curriculum. But a lot of colleges don't necessarily trust high school grades. They think there's some grade inflation happening at private and public
high school. There's grade inflation everywhere.
Yeah,
there's grade inflation at college.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Well, that's probably why the colleges think there's grade inflation happening at the high schools, because they're grade inflating themselves. So they're saying, well, we're doing it. Those MFers are definitely doing it.
You know, yeah. That's crazy.
You just keep looking down the ladder.
Oh my gosh.
School. So they like to use the SAT or the ACT as kind of the balance wheel against grading. It's something that is national and it's something that they trust.
And it's standardized.
Yeah.
What happens if UC goes test optional? UC system.
The University of Chicago, highly selected private university, obviously, in Chicago, went test optional about a year or so ago. And there was a thinking that a lot of other highly selective name brand colleges would follow them. Very few, actually, none did. Most of the test optional colleges are lower tier colleges. If the University of California does it, it's going to be big news, and I think a lot of other colleges will follow. There are a lot of students in California who go to college everywhere around the country. A lot of them take the SAT and ACT because the University of California requires it. If they no longer require it, I have a feeling other colleges will follow.
For those of you who don't know, the UC system, University of California, it's this huge conglomerate of colleges in California.
Yeah.
It's a lot of colleges, and they're all big, and they're all good schools.
Yeah.
But it's very unique because they have a lot of pull in the system. Because if they pull out of something or they'd make a move, it's pretty big.
I don't see them doing it, but...
Yeah. Because then they have to implement something else, and that's going to require work and money. And the whole thing is, we don't have money, no money, no money anywhere. How did the SAT become a beast?
SAT was first put into place. It was a way to try to expand access to colleges and universities, because at that time, most...
Yeah, fail.
That's shocking.
It always starts out that way.
Most of the elite colleges essentially took students from elite boarding schools and elite private schools. And the SAT was a way, we could trust taking a kid from you know, a high school in North Dakota. But it was never the high-stakes test it eventually became. And it became a high-stakes test overall later on because more students were going to college. And again, we wanted to, how do we assess a high school in the middle of Iowa and a high school in North Carolina? The other thing that happened is the U.S. News and World Report rankings, which rank colleges and universities, used it as one of their measures of success. And once they did that, colleges and universities felt like, well, we have to do everything we can do to raise our SAT scores, because if we raise our SAT scores, we're going to go up in the
bang.
You know, this bothers me a lot because so many colleges do silly stuff to try to rise in their rankings, just like how UC Riverside hired two Nobel laureates just to say, we have two Nobel laureates.
And they have a billboard right on the side of the freeway for some reason.
Does it help the actual research that goes on? No, because they already did their awesome research.
Yeah, their research is done. Yeah. They're not going to do another piece of awesome research and give them another prize. They were done. Yeah. They're peaked. Peak performance. They're done. Careers are peaked. There you go.
But so dumb. Yeah. Back to the SAT scores, though. Mm-hmm. I definitely saw this firsthand because I remember at my high school, people would practice and take the SAT so many times.
I remember the big books. The really big books. Yeah.
Or you could pay for tutoring. Do you remember all those tutoring?
I'm from the hood.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. No tutoring.
I got a C. Privilege.
Yeah.
But I was too poor. So I didn't get to take any of those SAT classes.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
For the kids to get into the prestigious school, they really beat themselves up over it to get into the, because that score matters for certain schools and certain.
Yeah.
That's to stress out about one number kind of reminds me of another number people stress out about a lot.
Are you talking credit score? I was going to say, is this a callback to the credit score?
Credit score. numbers tracking.
Yeah. I don't like the SAT score, I also don't know how to compare colleges, though.
Yeah.
Although I do like the AP test. Is that weird to say?
I would not be the person to ask. Ask at healthytalkshow.com if that's weird to say.
I think AP tests are a little bit better than SATs because AP is subject specific. So it would be harder to become a master at all the AP tests.
It's more specialized. I understand. Okay, that makes more sense.
Because SAT is just two metrics, math and reading.
There's definitely more.
Yeah, but if you take like AP history versus a bunch of AP math, that would probably give you a better profile. Plus your scores, but let us know.
Yep, askhealthytalkshow.com. Closing us out, Federal Trade Commission released a video, Advice for Social Media Influencers.
Oh, let me pay attention.
You ready?
Cyrus.
You ready?
I gotta get ready for this advice.
All right.
I'm ready.
Go.
Hi, I'm Amber Lee, an attorney at the Federal Trade Commission. Do you recommend or endorse things on social media?
No.
Wait.
We do not recommend or endorse anything.
Okay, do we?
Value for value. We don't take money in that form.
If you do, here are some tips to help influencers like you comply with the law.
All right, let's listen to some tips. Influencers, for the influencers who are doing things illegally.
Whenever you endorse a product, you have to tell people if you have a relationship with the brand. So, if a brand pays you or gives you free stuff or discounts, tell people about that relationship when you promote anything from that brand. Make sure people will see and understand that disclosure.
How many people?
Yeah, right. Make sure people will see and understand that disclosure. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Tell people about your brand relationship along with your endorsement. Not in your profile, not in a bunch of hashtags.
No.
Put it early in the message or superimposed prominently on the picture.
Oh, yeah. They're using...
I never see that.
Oh, yeah. They're locking it down with very specific language.
Are they going to crack down?
I don't think they have the power to, but
this could,
it'd be funny, but I don't think they will.
In a live stream?
That's a nice camera.
It should be repeated often enough that people will catch it.
Wow.
Make it plain and simple. You can say your post is an ad, advertisement, or sponsored with or without a hashtag. You can say thank you to the brand for the free product, if a product is all you got.
Oh,
or you can label yourself a partner or ambassador. Again, make sure to put your disclosure where people can't miss it. Want to know more about how you can be an influencer and stay on the right side of the law? Go to...
Nope.
Oh, thank
Because we don't need to worry about that.
Woo! Man.
Value for value, you just give us money for providing you information. We don't take advertisers. We don't need to worry about that stuff.
Woo.
we can say screw you to everybody. Yeah. Anybody wants to send us anything for free, we'll probably take it, but we're not going to talk about it on the show.
Unless we like it genuinely.
Yeah. It may be in conversation.
Yeah.
But we're not ad brand friendly at all.
No.
If the thing you send us sucks, we're going to say it sucks too. That's the problem.
We're not brand safe.
Yeah, we're not brand safe. That's the problem. Value for value. AskHealthyTalkShow.com. Do you want to lead us in with your part?
Yeah.
Go.
So please help us financially produce the show by heading over to HealthyTalkShow.com/support. Your financial contribution will ensure we don't have to worry about such things as appealing to our advertisers.
Being influencers.
Yeah. And this means that we'll be unbiased, commercial-free, and of course we have to pay for things like rent. Our show is value for value. If you found value, please provide value back by visiting healthytalkshow.com/support.
We record Healthy Talk Show live on Mondays and Thursdays at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. That's 3 a.m. UTC over at healthytalkshow.com/live. Another way to provide value is also feedback. AskHealthyTalkShow.com. Our email, call us 509-878-3229. And healthytalkshow.com/social for all of our social media links. Love and light.
Love and light.